Hello and welcome to my podcast. I am your host, Volker Balüder. I have been recording this podcast to give you a listening experience for your personal development. Having had mentors and coaches, trusted advisors and friends to bounce ideas off, I wanted to pay my learning forward. Enjoy the conversations I have with my mentors and hopefully you learn something on the way and discover something new for yourself. For more information and latest info what I'm up to, you can visit me on www.balüder.com or just look me up on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me on Twitter, which is @Balüder, or email me, Volker@Balüder.com. Now, without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Enjoy the experience. So this week, I welcome Chris Hyland. So Chris is a tech entrepreneur that believes technology can be used for good and can dramatically impact the world in a positive way. So he's lucky enough that his personal vision matches up his company's vision at the Happiness Index. So we obviously will ask him what the Happiness Index is. So the reason I asked Chris to be on the podcast is really then to discuss happiness, because whenever I had the conversations with my guests before about success, a lot of people talk about success is happiness, but is that what happiness means? And if I say in times of COVID-19, and we're recording this early June and beyond, you know, what does happiness mean? What does success mean? So their vision at the Happiness Index is freedom to be human. So organizations that succeed will enable their people to feel like humans and not like a number. And we, prior to recording, we already touched on that topic a little bit. So it's a great statement. And I personally, you know, couldn't agree more. So he writes so nicely his purpose: to work with organizations to achieve a thriving culture. This is achieved when a strong balance is found between employee engagement and happiness. So Chris, first of all, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Chris, I wrote this out, it's from, you know, from your LinkedIn profile where I stole that. There's so much in there already. So I would love to just dive into all the bits and pieces. But before we do that, do you maybe want to start with a short intro about yourself, where you're coming from, what you've been doing, your background and so on, and introduce yourself? Perfect.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I guess, well, to go a little bit far back, I finished university, 2002, and I did a marketing degree. Why I did marketing? Because as a kid, I was always fascinated with adverts, but for some reason, I always just like to look at adverts and understand the psychology behind them, as in who they're trying to target and who they're trying to convince. So I always loved marketing.
I started my marketing career.
I kind of started going down a bit of an entrepreneurial path where I worked out that, I guess for two reasons. Number one, I felt maybe if I started my own company, I could obviously be in control of my own decisions, and that might be right for me. And number two, back in 2008, was the rise of the search engines such as Google. And in 2008, I started my first marketing, digital marketing agency with my friend from university called Matt Phelan. Right. And that was actually in the, we spoke about it earlier, that was actually in the height of the financial crisis, the global recession. So I remember at the time when we first started that agency, a few people thought we were absolutely bonkers, and we probably were.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it is I think it was actually an opportunity for us, because we were coming from a world where suddenly you could measure things. You know, most people had spent a lot of money, millions of pounds on billboard advertising in the past, and you could only find out so much. So, you know, our digital agency was very much focused on data-driven information. So, you know, as a marketer, suddenly you could find out, well, how many people have been to your website? You know, what page did they view? How long were they on the page for? Which keyword did they put to come to your website? So suddenly all this new insight was incredibly powerful. So I started that with my friend in 2008. And then went on a great journey. We grew to 150 people in the UK, and then we were acquired by a European agency. Stayed there for 2 years, which was amazing, because we went from 150 to 1,000 in 20 locations. And we really got to learn about what culture is, because we created a great culture, which I'm sure I'll go into more in the UK, but that was one office. Suddenly you were part of a bigger family with, you know, lots of different cultures across the globe. So that was an incredible learning experience. And yeah, around that time, we also created the Happiness Index, so which is where I am today. So it's a bit of a longer intro, but it gives you a bit of background.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I mean, yes, you just mentioned it. We spoke about the recession earlier, obviously, you know, their parallels, you know, 2008, 2009, to the COVID crisis and beyond. Without wanting to go into politics, obviously, we still have Brexit to come.
Yeah.
So I mean, obviously a lot of businesses strive when they are founded in the recession. So I think you've done well founding at the right time. I think it's fantastic achievement to go to up to 1,000 people. I mean, culture wise, it's a challenge. Before we dive into what the Happiness Index does, maybe a quick word, how do you build a culture? If I say a good culture, because if you said from 150 people to 1,000 people, this is not easy to build a really sustainable culture. And what is a good culture?
Well, I think when we started, so the agency was called 4Ps, 4Ps Marketing. When we started 4Ps, it was our first, we'd never been business leaders before, our directors, you know, so you read a few books and you try and understand how you should behave. But really we found, you know, we were always, Matt and I always had a commitment to each other that we wanted to have fun along the way.
Yeah.
The first thing about building a good culture for us is that we are looking to build and grow this business. We want to have fun. Now, even back then, that was still seen as, oh, you know, a bit radical, a bit left field. Oh, you want to have fun in business? That doesn't really work.
Okay.
So, you know, at the outset, we wanted to have fun. And I think that one of the most important things as we've built that business years ago was honesty and transparency. So I think, especially today, you know, there's so much stuff going on in politics. There's so many people that are cynical around what leaders are saying these days. We just made a commitment to telling people how it is. You know, if it's not good news, we're just going to share it. So I think straight away, our culture, even when we were 5 people, 10 people, 15 people, was built on solid foundations because it was based on trust. So the most important thing for us was based on trust, and that's how it grew from there.
Brilliant. You're absolutely right. I think you can't beat trust in an organization. Unfortunately we see, again, we don't want to talk about politics, but too much, you know, leadership that, you know, doesn't portray trust whatsoever.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing, so we were going really well as a business, and actually that's how the Happiness Index was started. So we were going really well. We got to around 20, 25 people. But the challenge was then it was almost too big to call us a family. So we used to know everyone really well, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends, parents, birthdays, you know, made a real effort around that kind of stuff. But it got to a point where, you know, there's a new person starting, maybe they're employee number 30. Yeah. How do you find out about them? And we still made an effort, but that is when the Happiness Index was originally born, because actually we just thought, well, maybe we could start measuring this stuff. Maybe we could actually ask people once a month, just on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy do you feel? And actually we wanted to ask the happiness word specifically back then, because we found that you could ask people lots of, you know, work questions, so to speak, but really you usually get the most truthful questions when a family member's asking you, or you see a friend on a Friday night in the pub. And they say, how's work going? And you get that honest answer. So we wanted to ask people how they felt, and it was all anonymous. And the first time we did it, we just got some great feedback, and we were like, wow. I mean, off the back of this feedback, we presumed straight away that, okay, maybe the number one issue would be salary. But it wasn't. Actually, it was around personal development. So straight away, after the first survey we ever did, focused around what makes you happy, we started acting on it and improving the culture. So that's how it all began. And my business partner basically convinced me that this was too good to stay within one business. So that's how we ended up spinning that out into a new business, which is, as you know, is now called the Happiness Index.
That's fascinating. Because I remember building businesses, and if I say I never formalized anything like that. I mean, you're trying to be honest, you know, and if I say always as honest as you can be, given, you know, the mothership is not always honest with you, right? So you might have access to information you don't really want to share.
Absolutely.
Which, if I say, I always found difficult if it's not your own company, because you can't make the decision to be fully transparent. So I like that, how you came up with that idea. So what did you improve first? Everyone got a budget for personal development, or?
Yeah, I think the first thing we did was the top two bits of insight were personal development and training. And this was classic, I guess, for us, because we were a fast growing business, winning new clients all the time. And we were really focusing on capacity. So, you know, how much could a team member, how much work could they do for client X? And I guess as we were growing so fast, and sometimes you get stuck in the detail, we hadn't really considered that a lot of these younger, hungry, intelligent people also wanted to make sure they were learning outside of their job role. Yeah. So yes, we started bringing a budget and a training program for the whole business. And interestingly, off the back of that, we then launched the Happiness Index for our customers, because we thought, well, actually, surely the ultimate aim here is to gather feedback from our employees and our customers. So in a funny way, I find it funny sometimes, because we've been told that we've been very successful, and I know we've been very successful, but all we've ever really done is listen to people and listen to our customers, listen to our employees. And that has helped shape the future of our businesses. So it's obviously worked so far.
So essentially, you didn't launch it as a tool as you have it now for companies, but you launched it as a tool to ask your customers if they're happy with the 4P proposition.
That's exactly it. And that's why, you know, and do you know what? This is the thing, though. I mean, I remember watching Dragon's Den. I mean, we all know Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Many years. And I think, it's changed. The culture is changing now, but I used to get frustrated around, if you wanted to start a business, you had to come up with a new idea. And it's not about that. It's actually just about, can you do something better than something else? You know, but as you said, the fact that we actually tried this in a live environment, in a live business, that's why we knew this could add value to other businesses. And even now today, in the Happiness Index, every product we build, we try it on our own staff first, because it's one thing doing it in theory, it's another thing doing it in practice, and you learn all the intricacies of how to successfully run projects.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just trying to think, how did your customers react to that? Because it's almost like a NPS, like a Net Promoter Score, right? Or
whatever. Exactly that. So they loved it. The difference between an NPS is, I love NPS. A lot of our customers have used NPS. And it's a really good barometer, but actually we wanted quantitative and qualitative feedback. So number one, I specifically wanted to ask, how happy are you? Even back then we had a bit of controversy because people didn't really like that happiness word so much, but I felt I would get a much more of an honest answer. And then we'd ask for feedback on how we could improve. So straight away, I literally remember going through the first lot of feedback and seeing lots of great scores, like tens and nines and glowing feedback. And the great thing we could use then was we could use that as case studies, you know. But also I remember seeing a few ones and twos. I remember in particular there was a one out of 10 from one of our customers. And the great thing was that I could just pick up the phone and have a chat with them. And it just got sorted out. So for me, I learned a lot then, because I learned that actually sometimes people just want to vent. They want to vent frustrations and they want to do it in a safe environment. So I learned quite quickly that actually this tool was used to help our customers say great things about us, but also sometimes if they want to get some frustrations off their chest as well.
Again, which comes back to listening, right?
Absolutely.
It's the same principle. How you would define happiness, because from what you just said, and correct me, and I don't want to preempt your answer here, it's not customer satisfaction, right? It's customer happiness. So how would you define happiness
for a customer, for your own company, what, you know, in every context?
So I guess it's been an interesting journey, because, you know, we probably launched the Happiness Index around 2012 internally in the agency. And we did it at the start based off just what we believed in, you know. So we believed that having, you know, we believed if you've got happy customers and happy employees, that's a bloody good starting place.
Yeah.
So, but obviously through the last few years, you know, working with some huge businesses like we do, you get challenged on it. So how we define it now, so we at the Happiness Index, we take a neuroscience approach to how we ask employees how you feel. And why we take a neuroscience approach is because the key bit there is science. So we've done a lot of research ourselves. We want to understand how human beings act and feel. And what we found is that traditionally, for the last, I say, 5 years, if you asked anyone what I do, they would tell you I'm in the employee engagement space. So employee engagement is fantastic. But what we found, we did a study, and we found that if you as a business owner or a business leader focus purely on employee engagement, what that can lead to is employees could actually lead to burnout, because they might be engaged and they might be feeling really part of that business and they might be doing everything a professional person does, but deep down, are they really happy? But likewise, we also found that you can't focus purely on happiness, because if you focus purely on happiness, you might ask an employee to do something and they might turn around and say, actually, no, that doesn't make me happy. So we found that the perfect balance, and that's why we call it a thriving culture, is trying to find the link between engagement and happiness. And for us, that is very much around having a purpose-driven organization and being treated like a human being. That's the main key things which we kind of define as happiness.
Which to me sounds common sense, right? But unfortunately...
Absolutely.
The case is that... I mean, why do organizations don't understand that?
It's funny. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, that our vision is freedom to be human. And what I love about our vision is that it means different things to different people. And every time someone joins the business, and we always ask them what it means to them. We usually ask them about a month in, because they go through different experiences. But to me, it's very much allowing you as a person, you as an individual, as a human being, to be yourself. And I think that what we've found from, again, looking at neuroscience and looking at happiness, is that if you as a person can bring yourself to work, be it in an office or virtually, and you feel you can be yourself, that usually means you perform a lot better. And that links to things like productivity. So I think the reality is why businesses are only maybe starting to see the link on happiness now is that people always looked at it as a fluffy metric.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I don't really care if I'm not bothered if my employees are happy, because I can't influence if their girlfriend or boyfriend dumped them on the weekend. Totally understand that. But actually, if you can create an environment where they really want to feel part of it and they want to contribute, it's a huge factor. And especially looking at the, you know, I just creep into millennials. I'm one of the older millennials. Millennials and Generation Z, you know, these groups of people really want something different. They want to feel part of something. They want to leave their impact, and they want to be a purpose-driven organization. And for me, you know, purpose sometimes, I've also heard people say to me, well, it's easy for you guys because, you know, you're focusing around happiness, so it's easy to be part of something. It's easy to understand what you guys do, but I think the way a purpose organization can really thrive is by involving its employees. It's not being top down, you know, it's involving the whole organization, listening to people and actually growing a business together, rather than what's been done for, well, hundreds of years, I guess, yeah, is that it used to be very much people who run the business, the directors, the board, and everyone else. And people were treated like commodities. And they still are, you know, they still are in some respects. But I think it's changing. And I think it's probably a reflection on how well our business is doing, because, you know, we're having customers get in touch with us every day saying, okay, we weren't ready for this a few years ago, but we feel like we're ready to go on that journey now.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, because essentially, for me at least, it's a no-brainer, right? Every company should be doing that. They should involve all their employees. And I worked, you know, for plenty of startups where that was the case. But to your point, I think the majority of businesses haven't done that, right? They're either very big, so very, very much led by the top-down approach. And the question is, will they continue to attract younger talent or not?
That's what I'm excited about the future of our business, because ultimately I think some businesses now can still get away with, you know, you hear a lot of things like lip service, which mean, you know, directors of businesses will say things which almost kind of like they're meant to be saying, but they won't really follow through. So to answer one of your questions earlier, sometimes businesses or companies won't do lots of surveys with their employees. I won't focus on employee happiness because, number one, they're either scared of what they'll find, or number two, actually culturally, their business is not set up to respond to that feedback. And we've found that actually, if you ask your employees, let's say you're trying to work on trying to create a thriving culture with your employees, if you ask people how they feel and then you don't act on it, it can actually have an even worse detrimental effect. So I think a lot of the time, there's what we've found through the years is it doesn't really matter what business you work with. It could be 50 people or 500,000 people. It totally depends on the mindset of the leader and the support network around it. Because we have found in the past where, you know, the chief people officer or the HR director has hugely been on our side, but maybe they've been blocked at board level.
Okay. I mean, I'm just trying to think, because you're so right with that, right? Because I just remember my first ever job and to see how unhappy I was. Mm. And no one ever asked me if I was happy, right? Mm. It was all about my performance was good. You know, I made enough money for the company. You know, I progressed as I was supposed to be progressing, but I was never happy. And no one ever asked those questions. And it must be a cultural shift. I mean, I've been in work for a few years now. But even smaller companies, and I mean, you're coming from the agency world. I think if we look at the agency world, it's maybe leaning out of the window a bit, but I don't think anyone in the big agency groups ever asks that question if people are happy.
Absolutely, and it's funny because again, when we started our agency, it was the first time we'd ever started a business, so we used to get a lot of compliments from employees and from customers saying that we were unagency like. We never really knew what that meant. but I guess, as you said, agencies have been very successful financially for many years. So a lot of them would ask the question, well, why do I need to change if things are going well successfully? But I think I've watched from afar the last 5 years, there's a huge change in the agency landscape. And that is because a lot of them have been very set in their ways. And exactly what you said earlier, if you want to attract the best young talent, you have to listen to them, adapt to them. And this has probably been the whole COVID-19 thing has probably accelerated that even further, because a lot of leaders still like to think that, oh, I know how my people feel, or I know how my culture is, because they could see people in their office, where suddenly the whole country, most of the world for the last few months have been forced to work from home. And then suddenly you've got these traditional business leaders that have thought, oh God, I can't sense how my people are feeling today. So we need to find a new mechanism. So it's funny how things have gone full circle. And in some respects, this COVID-19 crisis actually forced businesses to think differently.
So your business must be striving at the moment, or it should be striving.
It's funny. So when COVID-19 first hit, everyone panicked, including our customers. And, you know, we had all these programs in place around what we should be asking around well-being and around happiness. And then suddenly, probably 70% of our customers panicked and went, oh my God, we need to hold things. So we thought doomsday was coming. But I guess suddenly a few weeks passed and people adapted to that, you know, our favorite phrase, that new normal.
Yeah.
And they realized actually that a lot of their employees were now working from home, in probably in a new environment, as we discussed with maybe their kids running around their feet. You know, it was a real challenge. So suddenly, right, we are now thriving as a business because people feel it's more important than ever to understand how you're feeling. Because, and I think what I love about what's happened in some respects is that people always associate or don't want to associate work and life. You know, let's keep work separate to life. But the reality is, I think what this COVID-19 pandemic has shown is that there's so much external stuff that happens in life that does affect how you feel in work. And, you know, a lot of the feedback we've had, so, you know, our score at the moment on our employees is about 6.5, which is really low for us. But when you go through the feedback, it's not related to us. It's related to the world we're currently living in and the stuff that's going on. So I think that it's a bit naive sometimes to dismiss the impact, you know, you and I and other employees, you know, go through by just watching the news and seeing what else goes on with the world, you know?
Apologies to interrupt your listening experience. I hope you're enjoying it so far. I just wanted to make you aware that my online course for coaching, where you can discover your values, mission and purpose in life, is now live on bebetter.baluda.com. Any sign up or recommendation for others to sign up is greatly appreciated. Now back to our episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, you just mentioned it that we spoke about it just before we went live. How it all blends together, right? I mean, when we had our first call, right? The kids are in the background, you know, kids are at home, right? It changes our, you know, how did I phrase it earlier? Right, it's kind of almost I'm looking into your living room, right? Once of a sudden, my business partner on the other side of Zoom or, you know, whichever video technology you use, becomes a human being, right? To your point earlier, and we blending that together, which is, you know, kind of nicer, but it's a different human connection than we're used to. It's interesting actually. I don't know if you can talk about it. I would love to dive a little bit into your employees' satisfaction at the moment, because you're saying the external circumstances and then what you can do about it. Because what I see, as you know, I'm teaching mindfulness. I have a few mindfulness classes I started during COVID-19 and some actually carried on afterwards, which become almost more of a, if I say, group coaching session. Which is about, you know, mental health, stress, feeling overwhelmed, you know, because these typical things that happen with, you know, stress-related impacts, you know, which we're all living in at the moment. And some organizations, if I say, ignore it. And the other thing you mentioned is the communication, right? Some leaders don't communicate. They don't show, you know, or if I say disclose, don't show the trust to the employees and say, you know, this is what's happening. So I think there are a few issues around COVID-19, but what do you see?
So it's interesting because I think if I think about the happiness index, you know, a lot of the customers we work with traditionally maybe asked how their employees felt once a year. And then, you know, we were trying to encourage them to ask more pulse-like surveys, so shorter, sharper, more regular surveys. And, you know, sometimes a business would do it quarterly, sometimes it'd be half yearly. And a lot of the time it was dependent on when they could act on that feedback. But interestingly, we created a product ourselves internally about a year and a half ago called Employee Voice. And the theory behind it was really simple, which is we don't believe that you as an employee should be asked to give feedback. You should be able to give feedback anytime. Yeah. So we created this product, which is basically give, you know, you can give feedback anywhere, anytime, through any platform, you know, WhatsApp, email, anything. And then, but the most important thing is that our head of people, Gemma, she would review the data every week, and then every single Friday we'd have a company update. And the whole purpose of the update was just to replay the data to all our employees and tell them what we're going to do about it. Now, for us, that was incredible because we were getting, you know, this was genuine pulse. Yeah. You know, this was genuine live data from our employees every single week around what they were feeling. Now, we used that for ourselves. And then, you know, the last year or so, maybe 4 or 5 customers bought it. Whereas in the last 2 months, we've had 100 new businesses sign up to it. Because right. I think obviously people, more than ever, people are going, I don't know about you, but I feel slightly different every day at the moment. You know, yesterday yeah. I was like, oh God, another week working from home. Like, you know, I can't wait to see my colleagues face to face again, you know, just to yeah. give out some hugs, you know. But I think more than ever, business leaders, and we've got customers from, you know, 20, 30 people to hundreds of thousands, but suddenly we all thought the same thing, which was, my word, how are they feeling? Yeah. So, and what's been clear, the number one keyword that's come through over the last 2 months
yeah.
of all our responses, which has been about 500,000, is uncertainty.
Yeah.
I think, of course, the hardest thing as a business leader is how can you give certainty in uncertain times? But even having that information for us and for our customers, at least we can go back to your employees and start saying, okay, well, we know right now that everyone's super worried about the future and no one can predict what's going to happen next week, let alone in a year's time. But at least by having that data and that insight, you can share it with your employees. So, you know, I feel like the trends that we're seeing is a bit like we talked about earlier, is that people have adapted to the new normal, but they're starting to crave for more of that balance.
Yeah.
Rather than just being at home every day. And I mean, I know for once that I'm an energetic person. I like to bounce off people. And
yeah.
although technology today is incredible, you know, Zoom, Google Hangouts, there's all sorts of stuff, you still can't quite get that energetic bounce off people like when you're in a workshop. So the gem, from our data, we're seeing a theme that people want to get back to a bit of a new normal. However, they're also, you know, we did a return to work survey. 90% of people okay. don't see us going back to the old normal. So, you know, we're all trying to create this new world and we're not quite sure what it's going to look like yet, which of course drives uncertainty.
About to ask, did you ask them what the new normal could look like?
So we think the new normal, so it's interesting because as we've yeah. expanded as a business, if I think of just our office, for instance, you know, every time we have a new employee, we want yeah. to put that employee's bum on a seat. So we have 21 people in the UK, you get 21 desks. Whereas now our new normal is much more, is focused much more on, we call hyper flexibility. So yeah. Really focused on, I don't even like to say the phrase work-life balance, but
yeah.
we want employees to really enjoy their life outside of work, because we believe if they're enjoying work outside of life, they're more likely to bring it to work. So hyper-flexibility, which means you can start work anytime. If you want to start at 7 o'clock, you want to start at 12 o'clock, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And maybe we're going to be in the office once a week or twice a week in the future. But another consistent theme is we've had so much positivity, not just from our own employees, but our customer database. No one's missing commuting. That's pretty clear. So that, I think that new normal is going to be a blend of a more balanced life where people are less focused on kind of like the financial benefits and more focused on, can I have a better quality of life?
Yeah. I had a conversation yesterday, and it's, if I say it's a bit off topic, but because you just mentioned something there that made me think about it. So it's someone who works, I don't know if you're familiar with this living organization, the concept of, you know, like seeing organizations as kind of like, yeah, almost human beings or,
yeah.
Which I assume, you know, it's obviously very closely to what you're doing as well. And, so we discussed last night on a call, if I don't want to call it minimum wage, but there are a few companies that trial out
to have, you know, the same wage across the whole organization. And you just mentioned, you know, better quality of life is more important than financial reward. Do you think as businesses / human beings, we are willing to do that, to say, okay, I sacrifice part of my salary to have more flexibility, which then ultimately leads obviously to more happiness, I assume?
I mean, I think the reality is people want it all, don't they?
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, we've definitely seen in our data a trend towards, because like I said earlier, we've been running this return to work survey, which is focused around really trying to understand how people feel about going back to the old normal. And it's definitely a consensus that it's funny because, as we mentioned earlier, around, you know, working from home and having calls with your kids running in the past, that would have been seen as really unprofessional. Whereas now it's the new normal. It's more human. So I think people have embraced it a lot more and are willing to sacrifice some, I guess, financial reward to have a better balance. Because, you know, we have all the evidence in the world from our own research to our partner research that shows, you know, if you're feeling happy in life and you're really enjoying and you feel that balance, you're not burning out. You know, I think we've all been there where you're working so hard. And sometimes it's only when you have a forced break or a holiday, you can't believe how tired you are. And you think, my word, I needed that break. Well, you know, we wholly encourage our staff to take sustained time off. And we actually track all our employees that don't take time off. So, for instance, we might have some employees that keep taking Mondays or Fridays off. But we say, no, you have to take some proper time off because you need to reset and really recharge. So when you do come back, you can give, you know, the best possible you, so to speak. So I'm absolutely see a trend where people, you know, I guess even from an office space point of view, you know, the WeWorks of the world, they were new business on the horizon where you could come there and for the first time in many years, you could flex that office. You could come there, have 30 days notice and grow or scale down. Yeah. Whereas I think maybe the next thing would be, well, actually, can we have an office where we come into once a week or twice a week and share it with other businesses rather than having that huge fixed cost of an office? So, you know, no one knows the future, but I think that obviously this pandemic has changed things permanently, without a doubt.
Well, you just said, I mean, I discussed it last week with someone as well, in terms of office space, you know, how much more office space do you need, right? And I think all you need is almost the ability to meet. So you need meeting rooms because that's what we all need. And we never have enough of them, even if we build an office, right, to our specifications. There's never enough meeting rooms. And a place where you can... Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so it's almost like you want to have a big old place where you can just rent meeting rooms and not for, if I say, horrendous prices, as most service offices do. And the rest is, you know, where can I plug in my laptop to charge it? And where can I, you know, get Wi-Fi? And, you know, if I say that's all you need in the future. And yes, as flexible as possible so you can grow, or, you know, you don't need huge office complexes. I mean, again, just thinking about it, there's one agency I know that just is building a huge building in London to consolidate all the agencies in that. And I don't think they're going to need that space in a couple of years' time.
Well, I could tell you a crazy story. One of our customers is a law firm called Slater and Gordon, and off the back of the survey we ran with them, they have decided to end their lease in their office, which is St. Paul's, which is incredible because they have 3,000 staff. So. Wow. For us, it's, you know, I expected maybe, you know, the big tech firms to be as brave as that. But for the guys at Slater and Gordon, I was incredibly proud, really, because they followed the data. So look, the first thing they did was ask their people how they felt about returning to work, how they feel about being in an office environment, etc. And obviously, they've done the extreme approach. But that is a great example, from my perspective, to show even a lawyer's firm, which I would regard as very traditional, have decided that they're going to, you know, move into this virtual world. So you know, that's probably a great example of how things are changing dramatically.
I mean, that is, 3,000 staff as well, that you just, that is brave. That is brave. But I think it's fantastic. And I think that will be the new norm. And yeah, as you say, right, we have, you know, in the digital industry, we easily do that, right? We easily, you know, work from anywhere, you know, anytime. And for us, working from home is fine. I think what most people, you know, without having done a survey, but some of the companies I contract with, most people miss the pubs the most, right?
Yes.
That real, you know, human interaction over beer and the chat, right? I think everyone does. I think especially in London. Although I spoke to someone yesterday and I heard, I live a bit outside London, but that in Clapham and Balham, the pubs at least do takeaways in terms of beer takeaways, not probably food as well. So the pubs down here don't do that. But yeah, I think that's what everyone misses, right?
Because but you know what? I love how, again, you know, this whole pandemic's been horrible. You know, it's been a crazy time in our lives. But like anything, you try to look at the silver lining. And what I love about it in some respects is how it's changed perceptions. Because, so look, just to be clear, we always want to have an office, because actually I think it's really important that we have a home, a base where we can come together as a team. Because I still believe that we have a great culture because we all know each other really well as human beings, and then you can take that offline. So I think moving to pure virtual culture can have its challenges. So we absolutely do want to have a home base somewhere. But interestingly, if we'd said to anyone before COVID happened that we were a virtual business, I think it would have raised eyebrows. Whereas now, you know, the amount of people I've spoken to that are running their own businesses, and they've just all saying, yep, we're moving to a virtual office. It's almost become that normal. So again, for me, I love the fact that through this process, it's changed so many perceptions about what's right and what's wrong when running a business. Because one thing I've learned is that there is no right or wrong. You just have to do what's best for you and your people.
Yeah. And I think the other thing I noticed, there are two thoughts actually. One is often when you expand as a business, people ask you, oh, do you have a local office? Right? Do you have an office in this place or this place? You don't need that anymore. So if I decided to do consulting for a company in the US or in Australia, you know, to name two countries at the other end of the spectrum, time zone wise, it doesn't matter where I sit, right? If I'm sitting in London, Australia or the US, it's you know, it's me adopting to the time zones, and that's probably all I have to do.
Completely agree.
And no one is asking that anymore. And the other thing which just came to mind when you said there's still this need for a home base, there's one company, and I'm trying to remember the name, and I don't even know if I know the name, but someone was talking about it the other day. They never had an office, and the only compulsory meeting they had was, I think, once a quarter, they had to go away for a week, and everyone had to attend it, and, you know, went to some nice location for a week to work, to have fun, to get to know each other. But they did that obviously then four times a year. And I think that can work as well.
Well, that's great. So we have you'll laugh at the names. So you call these, everybody's heard of an AGM, annual general meeting, which is pretty dull. Yeah. Well, we have an AHM, which is our annual happiness meeting.
Okay.
And then we have our quarterly ones, which is our QHM, which is our quarterly happiness meeting. And just as you said there, the whole purpose really is those days are usually separated into two, which is first half of the day, which is business stuff. You know, so what's our marketing? What's our marketing objectives? What are our customers trying to achieve, etc.? But it's around getting together as a team. And then that afternoon, it's just having fun as a team. So it could have been bowling, crazy golf, anything. But so we've done that anyway, pre-COVID world. But now we're talking about doing those things once a month. Because if we're going to see people less often, now right now, if I look at the short term, we don't have any plans to go back to our office until probably early next year, because people don't feel comfortable going back yet. Nothing to do with our providers. It's more to do with commuting and stuff. So in that case, how can we make sure that we as a company keep that tight-knit group and keep that culture? Yeah. So we're doing our first AHM end of this month, and it's going to be virtual. So I can't wait till we can do them face to face. but it's still really important, even in the virtual world, that we still get that time together, even if we're not actually together.
So you're going to call it a VAHM?
Yes, exactly. So I'm a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, before we wrap up, there are two things I still wanted to ask, and that is, you know, success and happiness. Do you have any, so you're a very data-led company, do you have any data around success and happiness? Are companies more successful if they measure the happiness of their employees?
Yes, is the short answer.
Okay. What's the long answer?
I mean, the long answer can be very long. And again, it's really, I talked a bit about energy. I mean, there's so many stats out there, because we don't say to customers what happiness means. We don't say to customers, okay, happiness means X, Y, and Z, because it can mean different things to different people. And again, that goes into our vision around Freedom to Be Human. It can mean different things, but what we do with all our customers first and foremost is almost like a cultural audit. So we try to understand what is important to them around happiness. It might be well-being. It might be being paid better. It might be having an inclusive workforce where you feel like diversity is really important. So it means different things to different people. But obviously, we've been very lucky now to work with customers for many years. And, you know, I'm sure they won't mind me mentioning them. Slater and Gordon, you know, the lawyers firm that have just moved to a virtual culture. You know, their NPS, which a lot of our customers still measure, which is a great barometer because everybody knows it. You know, they've gone from a not great score last year to an exceptional score this year. And that's been really, really been focused on listening to their people and trying to understand what happiness means to them. So we're lucky that we've worked with many companies for many years now. And, you know, their scores and their feedback keeps going up. In a funny way, I say to customers a lot of the time, the score isn't really what matters. What matters in some respects is that you get that feedback. You keep getting that feedback and then you keep acting on it. Because if you keep doing that, if you're an employee and you feel like you're being listened to, that will in turn make you feel happy.
It is actually that simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, yeah. Then if you act on it,
We just call it basically, obviously we're very passionate about it.
Yeah.
We just call it giving you a voice. It's all it is.
Yeah. It is that simple that you just need to listen to people, right?
Yes.
It's half the rent, right? It's half what you need to do, because then people do, they get a voice, as you say, and you know, they feel better. And if you then act on it as well, right? E.g., you know, you don't just listen for the sake of listening, but you actually, turn some of that into action. I think
And I think it's so important. A lot of the customers we work with today, you know, we focus on, you know, not just what are we going to ask our employees tomorrow. It's what do we want to achieve over the next 3 years. And I think when we ask employees how they feel, it's so important that we play that data back. So you said this. This is what we're going to do about it. And then you keep communicating to your employees. This is how we're progressing. Because of course, again, right back to the start of this, Volker, it's about trust, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. As simple as that. And if I say I'm impressed, I think it's as you said, right? You started that too with a very, you know, if I say your own company in mind, very simple idea. And I think it's just such a fantastic tool to connect essentially our business leaders to their own company.
Yeah.
And fantastic work, Chris. We're running out of time. Just as a final thought, what would be one piece of advice from you, if I say not for you, but from you, for anyone listening?
Oh, with regards to what? With regards to how they can help?
Happiness, employee satisfaction, I don't know. If there's anything where you say, you know, obviously, definitely implement your tool. No, that's for sure. But what is kind of like one piece of advice for someone who listens and thinks this makes makes a lot of sense. Is it like you just have to try to listen to your employees, or what is it?
I think that, I mean, you mentioned it a minute ago. I think in some respect, number one, you can never ever have the perfect culture. And also if you think your culture is bad, it's probably not as bad as you think it actually is. So I think the reason I mentioned that is because managing and trying to be the guardian of a culture of a business is an ongoing job. It never ends. And I think that especially in these times, you know, these COVID-19 times, it's accelerated people's emotions around how they feel about stuff. So, yeah, we mentioned it earlier, but for me, I mean, I've done pretty well for myself since I started my first business in 2008. And it's just been based on that theory, which is listen to your people, listen to your customers, listen to what they have to say. You know, we have a platform which basically analyzes all that data in real time, and then we act on it. And the communication part is just so important. And we call it, that it's like a virtuous circle. So, you know, employees know that if they're going to put something good or bad, you know, we have lots of shout outs. I loved working with Jody last week. That stuff's great as well. And we just embed it in our culture. So, you know, until the end of time, when I'm running any form of business, I will always be asking our employees how they feel. I'll be analyzing that data and I'll be acting on it. And that is just a continuous process.
Yeah. Brilliant. Chris, if people want to find out more about you or the Happiness Index, where do they go?
So, they can go to LinkedIn and search myself, which is obviously Chris Hyland, or they can go to our website, which is thehappinessindex.com, and you will see all of us happy people, of course, on that website. Yeah.
Brilliant. I obviously put that on in the show notes. So thank you very much for your time this morning. Fantastic conversation. And if I say... A happy life.
Okay, thank you. I always enjoy these conversations, and hopefully I've not rabbited on too much, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this week's podcast episode. Just a few things before you go. If you like this podcast, please leave me a 5-star rating on the outlet you're listening to. It's easily done and would mean a lot to me. For any feedback, please reach out to me on www.baluda.com or email me volker@baluda.com. Until next time, this is your host, Volker Baluda.